You're listening to another.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler, March 20th, 2015. Goodness gracious, the year is marching on. Spring is supposed to be here, but looking out the window at all the snow covering the trees and the lawns, you'd never know this is supposed to be the first day of spring, but it certainly is. And I thank you so much for joining me at the end of the week so we can play the inevitable game of catch-up. And with things being in Washington the way they are, things being around the world the way they are, there is certainly much to catch up on. Those of you who are familiar with me know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, an agency that was sliced and diced and stuffed under the umbrella of the Department of Homeland Security that has done such an inept and incompetent job that I've come to call it the Department of Homeland Surrender. And I don't blame the employees of ICE or CBP or any of the other agencies. We have to look at that famous Yiddish expression that says, when the fish goes bad, it smells from the head. This is, in my judgment, the direct result of what the administration wants. This isn't the first administration to want to take the borders down, seeing our borders as impediments to wealth, but those borders are our first and last line of defense against transnational criminals, international terrorists, and a labor force that would and does undercut American workers, their wages, their working conditions, their jobs. And that's why we have the kind of unemployment situation that we have, and this is not about vilifying immigrants. It's about laying blame where it belongs, and it belongs squarely on the shoulders of our government, both political parties who are kowtowing to those who bribe them through political campaign contributions, whether it's the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, whether it's Silicon Valley, whether it's corporations and special interest groups. Those folks with the deep pockets are truly getting the best government money can buy, and we, the people, are being shafted royally. But, you know, long term, the greedy don't understand that what they're doing is unraveling the tapestry, the fabric of our society, of our nation, which will ultimately be their undoing unless this headlong dash to the bottom can somehow be stopped. And that's the purpose for this program, to wake people up about just how significant our immigration laws are, just how significant our borders are. You know, you cannot possibly defend the country when you have unknown millions of foreign nationals from every country on the planet living in towns and cities across the country. Just a simple fact. The idea that we have people here who may not be wishing us well, who do not want to participate in the American dream, in fact want to eradicate the American dream, should be disconcerting. We saw what just 19 terrorists did to the United States on September 11th, 2001. And there are many people who immigrate to the United States for the right reasons, and they come from all the countries on this planet, including the Middle East. So again, we have to walk a tight line here of not vilifying people, but understanding that the process that is supposed to protect us is no longer working. And that's really a very serious problem. Because the idea that we have willfully taken down the barriers to those who want to hurt us is unconscionable. I would go so far as to say that there's absolutely no purpose to having a military if you're unwilling or unable to keep your enemy out of your country. You know, when we think about the Second World War and we think about the commandos going behind enemy lines, you know, we think of dramatic stories, you know, whether it's James Bond, the fictitious stuff, which, by the way, had a strong basis in reality. Ian Fleming worked for British intelligence. Ian Fleming, of course, was the creator of James Bond. or the actual stories of heroism and incredible accomplishments by our Office of Strategic Services, which was the forerunner of the CIA. And when you talk about going behind enemy lines, we immediately have this image of commandos in an airplane in the dead of night, and the plane flying with its radios off and the lights out and flying over the enemy's territory so that the commandos on board could bail out. And they were, you know, wearing all black. The parachutes were black. They opened their parachutes at the last moment so that they could not be detected. And then they would, you know, strip off their jumpsuits and emerge in civilian clothing and to get behind enemy lines to carry out acts of sabotage. Or perhaps they do it by boat. And in fact, right here in the United States, we had a couple of instances of German commandos, saboteurs, if you will, which was the preferred word during the Second World War. Instead of terrorists, we called them saboteurs, to sabotage, to blow up, to screw up. They came with the intention of destroying America's capacity to help England at the beginning of the war, before we even entered the war. And they came by U-boat. They were deposited off the coast of Long Island, off the coast of Florida, and paddled ashore in little rubber rafts. And they brought with them explosives and money, and their job was to blow up facilities. Well, today, they wouldn't have to take a U-boat. Today, they wouldn't have to jump out of airplanes to get behind what they think of as our enemy lines, which are the borders of our nation. All they need to do is get a Western European passport without even a visa, get on an airplane, and fly into any airport, if I can get the words out, in the United States. So we keep hearing this nonsense from the politicians that we first have to secure the border, meaning the Mexican border, and all will be right with the world. And of course, we know that that's a fabrication. Any politician, let me make this very clear, I don't care if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party, any politician who in addressing immigration says, first we will secure the border, my advice is first we need to get that guy to lose the election. This isn't a first. First, we need to restore integrity to the entire immigration system. First, we need to make certain that the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, to which, by the way, I provided testimony, we need to make certain that the 9/11 Commission is adhered to. That's the real first. This nonsense that we're going to somehow secure the Mexican border and all will be right with the world is an absurdity. You know, I write for a bunch of publications, and while we're at it, I may as well put that out there, and I'll remind you a bit later on in my program this evening. But I'm very proud to be a senior fellow with a terrific organization out in Santa Barbara, California, and with this long, drawn-out winter, I certainly envy my friends on the Pacific Coast. But the organization to which I refer, of course, Californians for Population Stabilization, CAPSWeb.org, C-A-P-S, CAPSWeb.org. I have also become a columnist for another wonderful organization, the David Horowitz Freedom Center, their publication, Front Page Magazine. I also have an article out this quarter for The Social Contract, which is a quarterly publication, Progressives for Immigration Reform, and as their name implies, they're on the left. They are left of center, and I'm happy to work with them, and in fact, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I've always voted as an independent. I think both political parties are the enemy of the American people. A quick aside, I was on a couple of radio shows in the past couple of weeks where the host are very conservative, and they know I'm not. That's fine. We're Americans. You know, this notion that you should only be a conservative if you're on a conservative program, you should only be a liberal if you're on a liberal program, is toxic. We've turned America into two armed camps. You know, you're either with us or you're against us. You know, the founding fathers understood the significance of debate, discourse, argument if need be. The First Amendment isn't just about freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion. Everybody rattles those off. It's also about the right to seek redress of grievances. And I have to tell you, if you folks don't see any grievances out there, the late great Perry Anderson, radio host, a friend and amazing guy, used to bellow into the microphone, if you ain't mad, you ain't paying attention. So if you don't have any grievances, I would suggest you check for a flatline EEG And the Founding Fathers said that's our obligation, that's our absolute right, First Amendment, seek redress of grievances and the right for peaceable assemblage. Well, why was peaceable assemblage part of the First Amendment? Because the Founding Fathers, in their wisdom, understood that for this democratic republic to do well, to thrive, for the democratic processes to go forward effectively, not only must we have freedom of press to put the information out there, but we need to have the right to assemble, to have those discussions, the debates, if need be, arguments. All they said was leave your weapons out of it. No clubs, no knives, no guns. But have at it. You know, the democratic process is not very neat and tidy, but it's essential. And when Americans disagree with Americans, all they're doing is exercising their constitutionally guaranteed freedom of right to assemblage, peaceful assemblage. We really should be listening to all points of view. I don't always get it right. Nobody always gets it right. And sometimes we can learn by listening to people we disagree with, and sometimes we can win people over. I've been traveling around the country. I'll be with the great Paul Valley, Major General, U.S. Army retired, formerly the Commander of Special Forces. I'm so proud to call him a friend. He's a great American. And I'm going to be with him in Montana, which is where, he now hangs his hat, as they say. He lives in Montana. I'll be doing a speaking event. And we need to go out there and have the discussions, have the debates if need be, and work together as Americans. Don't look at people from the other political side of the aisle and say, oh, they're my enemy. The enemy lives in Washington. It's both political parties. I was on these radio shows, and that was the point I started to make. And I've been asked by a couple hosts, how do you view the political parties? And my answer was very simple. I look at the Democratic Party and I look at the Republican Party the way I used to look at the Medellin and Cali drug cartels when I was assigned to DEA intelligence. We looked at them as two criminal organizations that would stop at nothing to control turf. Two criminal organizations that would stop at nothing to control turf. Does that not adequately and appropriately describe how the Democrats and Republicans conduct themselves these days? When the mechanism in Washington can talk about an unemployment rate of 5.5% or whatever other BS nonsense lying statistic and expect people to buy their garbage, this is no better than Pravda and Izvestia, the so-called news services of the old Soviet Union when it was a communist regime. Now it's rapidly turning into another nightmare for us because of the vacuum created by our alleged leadership in Washington. But this is all propaganda. 5.5%? Really? How do you dare say that when you know, and everybody knows, it's like an open secret, that this doesn't include over the last number I saw was 90 million plus unemployed Americans of working age. What does that statistic mean when you stop counting people who have blown through their unemployment benefits? How in the world is that an accurate number? And then you listen to these talking heads on TV say, well, the economy is doing better. Unemployment dropped another percent. I mean, what? What are we talking about? Or another tenth of a percent. I mean, what in the world are they talking about? When you can talk about a 5-point-anything unemployment rate, knowing that you're leaving out tens of millions of unemployed Americans of working age, take those numbers and burn them, flush them down the toilet. They're nonsense. They're nonsense. And every month we keep hearing about how wages for middle-class families are declining. It's not an accident. Everyone scratches their head. They say, how could this happen? We don't understand. Yes, they know how it's happening, unless they're totally stupid, unless they flunk the Wiggle test. For those of you not familiar with it, you conduct the Wiggle test by having the person stick their left finger in their left ear, their right finger in their right ear. They wiggle their fingertips, and if their fingertips touch, they flunk the test. I mean, these people have got to be kidding. We are importing ever greater numbers of foreign high-tech workers. This isn't just about illegal immigration. Very often when I get up on stage to do a presentation, Mike Cutler is here to talk about illegal immigration. No, that's not true. I'm here to talk about immigration, period. We're going to talk about immigration, period. You know, our immigration laws, our borders, are designed to do two primary things for America and Americans. Protect national security and public safety, and protect the jobs of American workers and the families that they support. That's why we have immigration laws. So when we hear the politicians saying, well, we need to bring in the best and brightest, and we hear these alleged journalists who I don't think know which end of the pen they're supposed to write with. Maybe they're trying to write with their erasers or their pencils. I mean, look, let's get this thing squared away. America has brilliant people. It was Americans who built the Panama Canal. It was Americans who broke the sound barrier for the first time. It was Americans who first walked on the moon. In fact, no one has since walked on the moon. It's Americans who have sent space probes out of the solar system, the Voyager spacecraft. We can go on down this list of the achievements of Americans, exceptional Americans, not exceptional because of race, religion, or ethnicity, but because of this economic system where the middle class was nurtured and shielded and protected so it could grow. The reason that communism doesn't work is because people are profit motivated. And I'm a proponent for rewarding success. However, when you want to profit at the cost of anything and anyone, then it becomes a problem. And when you have people that are worth gazillions of dollars who think that they need more money, so they need to unemploy more Americans and employ more foreign workers so they can shovel more money into their accounts, now we've got a problem. There has got to be a moral component to the desire to be successful and acquire or create wealth. And there is no moral compass to the thugs at the top of the food chain. So when I hear this nonsense for America to lead, well, wait a minute, folks. America is more than companies and mountains and lakes. Sure, that's part of the physical makeup of America. But I would argue that really America lives in the hearts and souls of Americans. Again, irrespective of race, irrespective of religion, irrespective of ethnicity. Came to America, had their children here, or who still come looking to contribute to the success of our country and to build a successful life for themselves and their families. That's what America has always been. And where have we gone? When you can have people talk about bringing in foreign workers so America can be successful, as we have tens of millions of unemployed Americans, I want to toss my cookies. This is such a betrayal of what America really is. This is a betrayal of what Abraham Lincoln so eloquently described during his Gettysburg Address when he spoke of America being that country of the people, by the people, for the people. It was about the people. The people. We the people. And all we're hearing is for America to be successful, bring in more foreign workers. And then you hear this nonsense, this pablum, this fertilizer. Oh, and they all want to come, the foreign workers, and every one of them is going to make up a major company and employ unemployed Americans. What are we, chopped liver? Are we that stupid? Do you really need to bring people in from India and China and other countries to have companies created? Yes, you will find the occasional success story that involves people who came here from other countries, and I'm certainly in favor of that. Elon Musk is a credit to America. I'm happy he's here. He came legally. He came via Canada from, I believe it was from South Africa. And he's been amazing. Created PayPal, created the Tesla car company, now SpaceX. Amazing achievement. Amazing. I'm happy he's here. But we let him in. That's not the issue. The issue is when you start bringing in hundreds of thousands of foreign workers, by definition, they are not exceptional, folks. All they are worker bees who are willing to work for fewer benefits under lower wages and worse conditions than their American counterparts, so they're displacing Americans. That's not the American dream. That's not how you sustain a country. That's not how you maintain leadership in the world. And if America stops being a leader, look who's waiting in the wings. See, it wouldn't be so bad if it was Canada, France, England, Germany. I'd say, okay, you know, what the heck. The Yankees didn't always win the pennant when I was a kid. The Mets, you know, only won it once or twice. But, you know, the point of the matter is that's not what's happening. Our competition, China, Russia, Iran, God forbid if they surpass us and they take over, God help us. God help us. That's what we're up against. This is a battle of survival. And the corporations that only can think about the next profit statement, the next earnings statement, don't understand they're playing with fire. You know, I compare them to a malignant tumor. Cancers have an insatiable appetite for nutrients. Cancerous tissue becomes, in a manner of speaking, the most successful. The most successful, just like we have these companies, the most successful tissue in the body of its victim. They're almost an organ, you know. It works together for its own betterment so it can spread throughout the body and absorb all the nutrients, and it just wallows in the nutrients. And it does a really great job right up until the point where it kills off its victim, and guess what? The cancer dies with its victim. And, you know, it's funny because I was in Palm Springs, California, delivering a speech before an organization out there. I was delighted to be there with several other speakers. And on the way home, I found myself in the crowded jetway, wondering at my sanity, flying back to New York City in the middle of, you know, sub-zero temperatures here in New York. And there was this woman standing behind me, kind of a, I don't want to say she was nerdy, she wasn't, but she looked professorial in her demeanor. You know, and we just kind of made eye contact, and, you know, we kind of, how are you? Oh, what are we doing going back up to the Northeast? You know, and here we were in beautiful 80-degree California. And I said, are you on vacation? She said, oh, no, I'm delivering a paper in Boston, Massachusetts. It turned out she was a cancer researcher, and cancer has ravaged my family. Thank God I'm a cancer survivor. I had prostate cancer. So you guys out there, when you hit 40, I would recommend get your PSA checked. It can't hurt, you know. That's the reason I'm still alive, because of my PSA test. And we got into a conversation, a brief one, as you would imagine, walking slowly, trudging slowly through the jetway to get on board the airplane. And she said, I said, you know, I've been reading so much about the research and the genetics being done. And she said, yes, but what they have found is that cancer is very resourceful. And she said that they have come to call the genes that seem to be involved in the creation of cancer the greedy gene. And I thought, wow, the greedy gene. And I thought about the unbridled greed of the likes of Zuckerberg and Gates and Greenspan and all these other thugs. And I said, you know, it's funny because when I speak about the state of America today, our economic problems, I compare these thugs with a malignancy because of their greed. And she thought it was very funny and said that she was probably going to have to borrow my example about people conducting themselves like malignant tumors. And I told her, well, that's wonderful, because I've been calling these people malignant for a long time. So, you know, that's what they remind me of. And they're in such a headlong dash for more and more and more wealth that they can't seem to understand that they are undermining the foundation of our nation. They are undermining the foundation of our nation and what it stands for. And this is very dangerous. You start undermining the foundation of the building, and pretty soon you have a building collapse. And aren't we witnessing a collapse, perhaps in slow motion, but a collapse nonetheless? More people unemployed, more people angry and frustrated. And so we've been distracted by the politicians who know how to play the game, and they've got Americans turning on Americans, blaming the Democrats, blaming the Republicans, oh, those crazy Tea Party folks. And I have to tell you something about the Tea Party. Number one, there are crazy people at every party and people who are not involved in politics. But I have done many presentations for people involved with the Tea Party. I have always been treated wonderfully. I don't have to agree with them on issues, and there are issues that we certainly disagree on. There are, however, issues we do agree on. And I have spoken 3 years in a row at the Tea Party convention in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, they gave me prime time, 25 minutes, 20 minutes. You know, it's not like stand up, wave, and say hi, everybody, and then sit down. No, they gave me ample opportunity. The first time I spoke, they had Santorum speak. They had Newt Gingrich speak. I was on stage as Newt Gingrich was leaving the stage. And so I could not have felt more welcomed. And you see, that is an expression of America at its best. Not because I spoke, forget about me, but they knew that here I am, a New York Democrat. And, you know, New York Democrats tend to be quite liberal compared to the rest of the country. And they were happy to have me. And they were gracious and welcoming, and I felt at home. And that's the way America used to be and the way America must be. The idea that we can disagree with our neighbors, but not vilify our neighbors. So, you know, we have all these bricks thrown at us. If you dare say, I want the borders secure, oh my God, you're anti-immigrant. Well, that's bunk. We're pro-enforcement. And this is very important, folks. So when you hear the nonsense about being anti-immigrant, here's the way you push back. And we have to push back. This nonsense of being too timid to push back is un-American. Americans have always been clear about where they stand. We've always been willing to bear the blows and get the word out on our own terms. If you are pro-enforcement, and I am, and in fact I dedicated 30 years of my adult life to enforcing and administering the immigration laws, then you're pro-immigrant. Because the same laws that tell us who to keep out and who to kick out, and this isn't based on race, religion, or ethnicity, again, the game being played by the thugs on the other side, oh, this is about Latinos, nonsense. If the immigration laws distinguish people by race, religion, or ethnicity, I never could have enforced them. My family was decimated by Hitler during the Holocaust. I was named for my grandmother, my mother's mother, who was slaughtered in Poland during the Holocaust. So please understand that our laws are completely blind about race, religion, and ethnicity, as they should be. It's about keeping out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer severe mental illness and are prone to violence or are sex offenders, fugitives from justice, people who have committed a variety of serious crimes, arson, murder, robbery, gun running, that kind of thing, drug trafficking, human trafficking, aliens who espouse terrorists, human rights violators, and war criminals, aliens who are likely to become a public charge, and finally, aliens who, if they worked, would likely displace American workers or, at the very least, drive down the wages of Americans similarly employed. Now, this isn't something that I made up along the way. This is what our laws call for. But those same laws that tell us who to kick out and who to keep out also tell us who we can let in. And every year, under the laws that I support, we admit more than 1 million lawful immigrants. They are given green cards. They are immediately placed on the pathway to United States citizenship. Over 1 million the average year. I think last year was just a tiny bit under 1 million. Those same laws allow us to admit tens of millions of non-immigrant, meaning temporary, supposedly temporary visitors to the United States. Those same laws enable aliens to acquire political asylum so that they can be protected from returning home to countries where their lives may be in jeopardy if they articulate credible fear. Now, that system lacks integrity, and this is why I don't just talk about illegal immigration. It's about the entire immigration system. But in concept, I'm a supporter of political asylum. I believe it's important that America, but not just America, all countries must chip in and take their fair share, but not do what we're seeing now, where we deposit entire communities of people from countries where terrorism is to be found in great abundance and put big clumps of population together. In fact, I was on Fox and Friends, interviewed by the delightful Anna Koyman a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about the Somalis in Minnesota. I did a ride-along with the sheriffs in Minnesota. I was given a tour of the prisons. I stood in the jail cell that had been occupied by Massawi, the French citizen, the so-called 20th hijacker. And the idea of dropping tens of thousands of people from countries where terrorism is a problem into a tight community where they don't interact with the rest of America is dangerous and wrong-headed, you know, because what we then have is the ability, I believe, for recruitment by ISIS, Al-Qaeda, because these are folks living in their own little enclave and don't even know what America's like. For all they know, and they don't know, what the real story is on the United States. And you're not going to find out by living in an enclave. And some come and come with the intention of doing harm, as did the 9/11 terrorists, as have sleeper agents. So, you know, but certainly one of the things I think, if I were running things, I would not want to see these huge enclaves where we intentionally basically transplant a community from one country and bring it to the United States en masse as a community, because that doesn't give these folks the opportunity or the incentive, for that matter, to assimilate, to become part of the tapestry of the country. As a New Yorker, I love diversity. I love Chinatown. I love Little Italy. I like to go to the neighborhoods where you can find Brazilian barbecue, where you can find Jamaican food. I mean, we have everything in New York, and it's 24/7, and it comes at you big, loud, and fast, you know? And part of my problem is this is home for me. But I love diversity, but not when diversity turns us into a Tower of Babel, you know? And if we want people to assimilate, then we need to create an environment where they have to interact with the surrounding community. And I think that would be very helpful, which is what we're not doing. So we're getting a lot of this stuff wrong. And the risks that we run because of it are severe. But, you know, again, we come back to the 9/11 Commission, and we come back to the point that I started to make about the politicians who say, well, first we're going to secure the Mexican border. And I want to know why that is the metric. I want to understand, why is it that all we really need to do is to secure the Mexican border, and then all will be right with the world? I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine, and I called it Border Security in the Immigration Colander. And I know I've spoken about this before, and I don't want to be repetitious, but it's just something that bears repeating. If, in fact, you're talking about fixing immigration, why don't we start out by looking at something that the 9/11 Commission staff report had to say? And when I read this to you, if you've never heard this before, I think it's going to startle you, because you're going to understand that this is a big, fat, juicy lie being perpetrated by swindling politicians. Forgive the redundancy. But when a politician, and please don't tell me, oh, so-and-so is a great candidate because he's a conservative. If you read the Barbara Jordan report, the Jordan Commission, you would agree with her completely, I am sure. Barbara Jordan was an African-American member of Congress who was an extreme left-leaning member. She was as liberal, progressive, whatever terms you want to use. She was there. And if you read what she said about immigration, you'd say, wow, she's right. See, this isn't about left or right, folks. This is about right or wrong. I don't know anybody, because of political beliefs, unless they're crazy or radical Islamists, which is the same thing, who want to commit suicide, want their children's futures to be taken from them. Nobody wants that. Everyone wants to see an America where there's opportunity for success. Really, we do. And I don't care if you're a Democrat, I don't care if you're a Republican, you know, whatever. Everybody wants to live decently and have a bright, secure future for our children and for their children. So when we hear this nonsense about, oh, so-and-so is a conservative and that makes him or her good, that's about as stupid as it gets. I'm going to read a couple of brief chapters here, or paragraphs, not chapters. I don't want to put everybody to sleep. But you need to hear this. Now, this comes from the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. And you should know that the 9/11 Commission staff was comprised of agents and attorneys who worked with the 9/11 Commission. These weren't just people that got together on a street corner one afternoon. And so this starts out on page 47. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. By the way, so that you understand the terminology, folks, immigration fraud, fraud of any sort, generally means lying on an application about a material fact that, if the truth were known, would disqualify the person for whatever it is that they're looking for. So basically, fraud on the application is a lie placed on paper. So they say here, their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and Landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agriculture Worker Program after falsely claiming that he had picked beans in Florida. He lied. And we gave these people the benefit that they applied for. Then we get to this. And this is what I really want you to focus on. And I also want you to know, when you think, by the way, about the administration providing ID to people without being able to even interview them. And the Republicans are in agreement. The 9/11 Commission itself said that the terrorist, a travel document, was as important as a weapon. I'm paraphrasing them, but that was essentially what the sentence said. So that when you give people identity documents that enable them to move around freely, you're basically giving terrorists a weapon. As much a weapon as a stick of dynamite. And where are the Republicans? And when you listen to the rest of this, you're going to really get angry, I think, and I hope. And you should be furious. And we need to start to confront these people at their town hall meetings. You know, they want to go out there and glad-hand people. Go to these darn town hall meetings, folks. Bring your friends and videotape it with your cell phone. In the old days, it was hard. You had to bring a camera. They were clunky. They were big. You have a cell phone. Videotape the response. The basic question I want you to ask every candidate running for any office is, how do your proposals square with the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission? That's the question. People call me up. Oh, Mike, I'm going to this meeting with my congressman today. What should I ask them? The question. How does it square with the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission? So now let me read this to you. This is page 54. This is the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. And this is the section that's designated as 3.2, terrorist travel tactics by plot. See, travel was so critical for these people. Traveling across our borders, traveling around our country. Here we go. During the 1990s, Al-Qaeda was either directly or indirectly involved in a number of terrorist plots in the United States that partially or totally failed. A study of these plots and how those involved in them moved about clearly indicates that foreign terrorist operatives were being planted in the United States and that foreign terrorist operations were being planned against Americans here at home. I'm going to stop myself and make a point here. We keep hearing about homegrown sleepers, and yes, lately we've been finding more Americans who've been enticed into hooking up with ISIS. The FBI just arraigned a former Air Force mechanic who had been born in the United States, traveled to Turkey or Egypt on his way to Turkey, hoping to get to Syria to fight with the ISIS terrorists in Syria. He's certainly homegrown. But homegrown sleeper is a contradiction in terms. If you ask people in the intelligence community or law enforcement what a sleeper is, and I wrote about sleepers both for CapsWeb.org and Front Page Magazine. I've written about it for Progressives for Immigration Reform. When they talk about sleepers, a sleeper is a foreign national, an alien, who enters the United States legally or illegally, running the border or coming with a visa, doesn't matter, who keep a low profile. They don't want to call attention to themselves. Somebody once said that an effective spy is someone who would not attract the attention of a waiter or waitress in a greasy spoon diner. I would interject, might even be that waiter or waitress. Well, guess what? Terrorists operate the same way. They dress in a very low-key manner. If they're in a place where people are wearing suits, then they wear a suit. And it's not going to be James Bond with that perfectly tailored tuxedo and, you know, no, they want to just blend in average clothing, average suit, nothing extraordinary, no fancy hairdo, no strange-smelling aftershave lotion. They want to be totally forgettable, almost like the Men in Black, if you saw the Will Smith movie. You know, they want people to not see them. I mean, if they could wear an invisibility cloak, they would. And how do you do it? You dress very low-key. You smile, you don't engage people in conversations, but you smile. You don't look nasty, you don't look mean, because then people are going to pay attention to you. So someone smiles, you smile back, you nod, you keep moving. You keep moving. So understand what we're talking about. So when we're told, oh, homegrown sleeper, baloney. And in fact, the politicians are so intent on getting people to forget about immigration that what do they say? Well, they say that even when terrorists are arrested, they describe them as homegrown. Case in point, Faisal Shahzad, the guy, if you remember, in 2009 tried to set off an explosion in an SUV that he had parked at Times Square. For those of you not familiar with New York City, Times Square, you know, is known as the crossroads of the world. It has some of the heaviest concentration of pedestrians anywhere I have ever been in my life. You feel like you're in a sardine can. People are literally walking shoulder to shoulder. If you get claustrophobic, don't go to Times Square. I love it. It's energized. The amazing lit up street signs, and it just is there's a vibrancy to Times Square. It's known throughout the world. But it's densely populated. You can go out there in the middle of the night and there's tons of people walking around and the lighting is so bright it's almost like daylight. And that's Times Square. This is where the guy was going to set off a bomb. Thankfully, it fizzled and some hot dog vendor or some street vendor spotted smoke pouring out of the van. They isolated it and they were able to prevent things from getting out of hand. But Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, came here at the age of 20 with a foreign student visa. And Ray Kelly, at the time, was the police commissioner, issued a press release. And what did he say about Shahzad? Oh, this guy is a classic example of a homegrown terrorist. Can someone explain to me how somebody who enters the United States for the first time on a student visa at age 20 is a classic example of a homegrown anything? How are you homegrown if you come here as an adult? And nobody challenged it. No one said, hey, Ray, what's going on? What you're saying is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. How can you say that someone who came here at the age of 20 is homegrown? In whose home was he grown? Are you serious? And remember, the New York City Police Department is arguably the most sophisticated police department in the United States, if not the world. So for our police commissioner, who, by the way, had previously been in charge of U.S. Customs, this guy isn't stupid. I met Ray Kelly. He's not a dummy. But he knows where the wind is blowing from. And Mayor Bloomberg, a globalist, would not have tolerated anything less. I wouldn't even doubt that Bloomberg told Kelly to say that. You know, it's interesting. Bloomberg jumped up and down about salt and sugar in the diet, never said a single word about heroin or cocaine. You know, their grip on what's true and what's not true is very tenuous, not because they're stupid or crazy, but because they're greedy. Think of the greedy gene. They have them. If they test their DNA, they will find the greedy gene. So at all costs, they will never, ever admit that immigration has nothing to do with terrorism. I've testified before a bunch of congressional hearings. I've had members of Congress say to me, oh, immigration has nothing to do with terrorism. I say, wait a minute. They had to come here. That's immigration. No, we're not going to talk about that. No, don't say that. Don't say that. And they try to talk over you. You want to talk about ignoring the obvious? Do you think they're that stupid? They're not that stupid. Some of them are that stupid, but it's not about stupid. It's about agenda. And the agenda is to take down the borders because they're being paid by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They're being paid by corporations that want our borders removed because they are impediments to trade. You could actually say these people are traitors, but I wouldn't spell it with the D, but I would spell it T-R-A-I-T-O-R-S. If you think that it's wise when we are concerned about terrorists coming to the United States and carrying out attacks perhaps at museums or malls. ISIS made it clear they wanted to go to Mall of America. I've been to Mall of America. Amazing complex. Our enemy have said we're going to come to your country and we're going to do it to you. If ever there was a time to batten down the hatches, double lock the door, this is it. And they are busy working with their screwdrivers to take the doors off the hinges. Does this sound wise? Does this sound consistent with what's going on? Anyway, I've interrupted myself enough. Let's go back to what I was reading. But I just want to make it so clear to you. I want you to understand that for the right price, these politicians are selling out our national security. It's that simple. And I'd love to debate them. I'd love to have someone say, oh, no, you're getting it wrong. National security has nothing to do with secure borders. And by the way, the borders can be found at all 50 states, any state with an international airport, any state that has access to our coastline, and there's tens of thousands of miles of coastline. Any state that lies along our northern or southern borders are all border states. In fact, if you want to know how secure the borders, I'm going to make this point. It's something for you to think about, and you can discuss this with your family. I hope you do, and I hope if you like the program, you'll go back to the podcast. Maybe forward the link to the podcast to all the folks you know. Let them hear this. This notion that we can determine how many illegal aliens are present in the United States based on arrest statistics by the Border Patrol is insanity. It's estimated that 40% of the illegal aliens in the United States did not run our borders, but came in through international airports. So how in the world do you look at Border Patrol arrests on the Mexican border and say that's the be-all and end-all in terms of knowing how many illegal aliens are in the United States? Question number one. Question number two, is there a better metric? Do you folks know that there is a better metric? By the way, when I was on with Neil Cavuto, and he made that point about the Border Patrol arrests, I said, Neil, trying to figure out how many illegal aliens are present by finding out how many were arrested is like taking attendance by asking people not present to raise their hands. Think about it. It makes sense. I got Neil to laugh, and I got quite a few humorous emails afterwards. But understand that this is a false metric. If you really want to know the best metric for determining border security, I'll tell you what it is. Think about this. It's the price and the availability of heroin and cocaine. We, as a country, do not produce heroin or cocaine here. Every gram of heroin, every gram of cocaine that's out there was smuggled into the United States. That means that every gram of those drugs, chemical poisons is what I call them, provides graphic evidence of a failure of border security. Think about it. Every gram of heroin, every gram of cocaine is graphic evidence of a failure of border security. We are now in what is probably the worst heroin epidemic in history. And last year, DEA made its greatest heroin seizure in one of our border states. You know what border state that was? It was the border state of New York. See, we have 50 border states. If you look at New York seaport, where the ships come in, if you look at Port Elizabeth over in New Jersey, if you look at the northern border that New York shares with Canada, Kennedy International Airport, Newark International Airport in New Jersey, just across the river, New York is a border state. And the greatest amount of heroin seized by DEA, Mexican heroin, was seized in New York City. So what does that tell you? The borders are anything but secure. But that's not what we hear about. All we're being told is once we secure the Mexican border, magic will happen. So let's continue on. So they said here, let me just to refresh your memory, operatives are being planted in the United States and their foreign terrorist operations are being planned against Americans here at home. Their attempted operations, the terrorists, that is to say, were valuable to those carrying them out despite their lack of success. They gave Islamic terrorists critical operational experience in entering and embedding in the United States. Although there is evidence that some land and sea border entries without inspection occurred, these conspirators mainly subverted the legal entry system entering at airports. Do you realize what this is saying? So if we know that the great majority of terrorists that had been identified up until the time of the 9/11 Commission report around 2003, 2004, the great majority were through international airports, what in the world does that have to do with securing the Mexican border? And someone needs to ask these people that. I've heard Ted Cruz say it. I've heard John McCain say it. I've heard Chuck Schumer say it. It doesn't matter if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. Advocates for comprehensive reform are all saying the same thing. Once we secure the Mexican border, secure the border first. Secure the border first. what in the world are we talking about? What border where? What are we doing on the Canadian border? Nothing. What are we doing about the visa waiver program? Expanding it. On 9/11, we had 26 visa waiver countries. Now we have 38. Chile became number 38 a year ago. Why are we only hearing about secure the border? First, secure the border. This is the biggest lie I have heard in quite some time, and we're hearing it from politicians from both sides of the aisle, because they both have the same goal. So now they said that they subverted the legal entry system by entering at airports, and in so doing, they relied on a wide variety of fraudulent documents, on aliases, and on government corruption. Because the terrorist operations were not suicide missions in the early to mid-1990s, once in the United States, terrorists and their supporters tried to get legal immigration status. Isn't that what the Republicans are also proposing? Legal immigration status for people who snuck in? Undocumented? How about uninspected? And nobody would get on an airplane if they saw people sneak past TSA. So they tried to get legal immigration status that would permit them to remain here, primarily by committing serial or repeated immigration fraud, by claiming political asylum, and by marrying Americans. Many of these tactics would remain largely unchanged and undetected throughout the 1990s and up to the 9/11 attacks. Thus, abuse of the immigration system and a lack of interior immigration enforcement were unwittingly working together to support terrorist activity. It will remain largely unknown since no agency of the United States government analyzed terrorist travel patterns until after 9/11. This lack of attention meant that critical opportunities to disrupt terrorist travel and therefore deadly terrorist operations were missed. And now we get to page 98. Terrorists of the 1990s as well as the September 11th hijackers needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. Did you hear anything here about the Mexican border? No, you didn't. No, you didn't. Yet that's all that we hear. First, secure the border. Why are they not talking about the other failures? Because they know, they've had hearing after hearing after hearing, that they have given political asylum, for example, to members of the Mexican drug cartels. If the system now is so inept, so incompetent, so messed up that cartel members have been granted political asylum, can you trust that system to do its work? And the answer is, of course not. And yet that very same system at Citizenship and Immigration Services would be the same bureaucracy, the same system, the same employees that would have to administer a massive amnesty program. How in the world will this have any integrity? And the answer is it won't. And then you go back to the 9/11 Commission talking about how the terrorists wanted legal status. Comprehensive immigration reform is a massive program to provide millions of people whose true identities can't be verified with legal status. How in the world is what Mr. Cruz and Mr. Schumer and all these others, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, go down the list, how does this directly, 180 degrees, conflict with what the 9/11 Commission had said? This is a prescription for a disaster. Every single advocate for comprehensive immigration reform should be given the MVP award by ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Just that simple. There is no way around it. There is no contradicting it. I have read the materials. You heard what I had to say. Go get your own copy of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. You know what? It's free on the internet. Go to my website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, all one word. Go to capsweb.org. Go to any one of the articles where I've written, and very often I include a link to the 9/11 Commission report, the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Punch it into Google. It's free. It's free. It doesn't cost anything. You punch it in, you click on the link, and bango, there's the report. And you will see that the emphasis was on the flawed process for adjudicating applications for immigration benefits. And all we're hearing is, first, secure the border. Is that what the 9/11 Commission said? Show me that phrase in the 9/11 Commission report, first, secure the border. Where does that show up in the 9/11 Commission report? If you're concerned about terrorism, and we should all be, why are we not looking at the 9/11 Commission report the way that airlines look at a report issued by the FAA and the NTSB after an airplane falls out of the sky, digs a deep hole in the ground, and kills a lot of people? Once the FAA and the NTSB issue orders, they are followed. If it's about maintenance, if it's about the construction of an airplane, they will modify the airplane. If it's about pilot training, they retrain the pilots. If somebody in the control tower screwed up and it could be showed that it was bad training or whatever, they change procedures. 100 people get killed. 5 people get killed. Bango. On September 11, 2001, over 3,000 people were killed, and some are still dying. They were exposed to toxins, and they're dying terrible deaths, suffering from cancer and all sorts of debilitating diseases. And that still can't get people to focus on the damn issue? First, secure the border? Where is that in the 9/11 Commission report? Show it to me. I want to see it. We should be demanding of the politicians, why are you lying to us? Why are you focusing our attention on a distraction? Now, I'm not telling you we should not secure that border. That's a given. Of course it should be secured. But it's one of many holes in that colander. These lying politicians are basically telling us that if we partially sort of halfway plug one hole in the bottom of that colander that you use to drain pasta, it is now suitable to use as a bucket. Can you imagine that? What would you think of somebody who plugged one hole in the bottom of a colander and tried to use it as a bucket? Would you not wonder at the person's sanity? Would you? I certainly would, but then why are the politicians telling us just that? Plug one of those holes and we now have a bucket. We now have a prescription for a catastrophe is what we have. And then you have the administration, and I just wrote an article about this for Front Page Magazine. There will be an article coming out probably within the next week over at capsweb.org. The president, the administration just announced that they found out that ICE has released over 30,000 criminal aliens. And by the way, when I hear, when they only violate our borders, no, it's not an only, because in order to ply their trades, criminals have to come to the United States. In order for terrorists to attack us, they have to come to the United States. So when people come to the United States, it's not a minor violation of law. If someone broke into your house and was sipping tea in your living room and you woke up in the middle of the night and you heard noise downstairs and you went downstairs and saw people sitting in your living room that you didn't invite in and you didn't know who the hell they were, would you just go back to bed? Or do you think you might call the cops and say, get these people the hell out of my house? We don't know who they are. We don't know why they're here, but they certainly have no legal right to be here. Well, they only violated the immigration laws. What do you mean only? This is as stupid as what difference does it make? Don't you understand the level of danger this creates? You know, Bloomberg ranted and raved when he was the mayor of New York City that people who trespass in the public housing projects needed to be prosecuted and sent to jail because they posed a threat to public safety. I agreed. But when people trespassed on the United States, he wanted to give them the key to New York City. Chuck Schumer, a few months ago, ranted and raved. And what was he ranting and raving about? That people were trespassing on the Brooklyn Bridge, the Manhattan Bridge. They were getting up on the top of the Trade Center complex. They did a base jump. You know, they parachuted off the top. Well, the reason they're trespassing, Schumer said, was because the penalty is only a year in jail and realistically, they'll serve no more than 90 days in jail and probably a lot less. He said, if you want to stop this very dangerous business, because we don't know who these people are, then they should have to go to jail for 5 years. I want you to think about it. There's Chucky Boy saying that if you climb the cables on the world on the Brooklyn Bridge or the Manhattan Bridge, you need to sit in a jail cell for 5 years, half a decade for climbing a cable. But when you trespass in the United States, Schumer believes you've earned the pathway to citizenship. Is anybody paying attention to this insanity? Damn, what we're talking about. And this has nothing to do with Mexicans or Latinos. We get more people from Latin America running that border because of geography. But when we hear about the Latino vote, it's a disgusting, despicable, humiliating form of profiling. And unfortunately, most Americans are fools. When I went to Brooklyn College, we used to say the masses are asses. So if you ask somebody, what's the most likely name of an illegal alien, and it's Rodriguez or Smith, everyone's going to say Rodriguez. Maybe not. We have millions upon millions of wonderful American citizens, multi-generational. I'm first generation. I have met quite a few people who had Latino last names, you know, and their family could trace their ancestry in this country back generations, far longer than I can. Many of them had served honorably in the military. Perhaps they had family members die during the Second World War, the First World War, the Vietnam War. But we're being told, oh, the Latino vote, this is about Latinos. It really paints Latino Americans in a horrific, terrible light. I'd be infuriated. It also says that, oh, if they're Latinos and they don't have respect for our laws or our borders, the way to appeal to them is to take down our borders and stop enforcing our laws so we can get people to vote for us who, I guess, are immoral. Many of the Latinos who I know are probably more moral than many other people I know. This is a lie. It's slanderous, and it's bigotry, and it's profiling, and it's inexcusable, and it's unacceptable. But nobody ever calls them out on it. If they believe a police officer profiled, these journalists have a cow. And profiling has a legitimate place in law enforcement, as long as we're not just looking at color or name or whatever. There's a bunch of situational and behavioral issues that come into play when you profile in law enforcement. But some journalists, as soon as they hear the word profiling, go berserk. And then the next story they cover is how a politician is looking to curry favor with the Latino voters. And they don't even hear what's coming out of their own mouths. They lack mouth-ear coordination. So anyway, the administration admits that they let over 30,000 illegal aliens, deportable aliens, who had criminal histories go. And it was interesting. Because if you want to talk about trying to put lipstick on a pig, the story they gave was, well, this is better than last year, because last year we released 36,000. And the reality is the reason that they released fewer this year than last year is because ICE doesn't make as many arrests as they used to because they're tightening the noose around the neck of the ICE agents. And then what was even funnier was a week earlier, ICE issued a press release, and as I wrote in my article for Front Page Magazine, when I go through the ICE and DOJ and CBP websites looking for their press releases, I call it dumpster diving. You know, as an agent, very often law enforcement people will go through the garbage left at the curb by individuals or organizations that are under investigation looking for evidence. You know, you may find some precursor chemicals for drugs, you may find business records, you may find phone numbers. You never know what you're going to find. And that's kind of how I look at going over the press releases issued by these agencies, because I'm trying to figure out what's really going on. So they issue this press release, Operation Crosscheck. What a success story. For 4 days, agents fanned out across the country. They arrested aliens from 94 countries. There aren't 94 countries in Latin America. Clearly, this isn't about Latinos, right, folks? And in fact, they came from Poland and Finland, and there was one guy from Mexico. But they arrested all these people, 2,000-odd people, under Operation Crosscheck. This was the sixth installment. They've been doing it for a few years altogether. I think they've made 13,000 arrests. And they found that 15 of the people they arrested under Operation Crosscheck have been granted lawful status under the president's dreamers nonsense. In fact, one of the people was found with a gun. So we're told, oh, these are just dreamers. They just want their share of the dream, and they're all wonderful, and we've done careful checks. Well, it's funny, as I sit here thinking about it, 15 were found to have criminal histories, and it took 19 terrorists to create hell here in the United States on 9/11. So 15 bad guys were given dreamer status. God only knows what their real names are. And we're told, well, they entered as children. Yeah, but they could be 31 years of age to qualify to apply. So how do you know if the person came here 15 years ago or 15 days ago? No field interview, no field investigation, no face-to-face interview, and you're dealing with people who may have been using multiple false identities. This is mayhem. This is sheer mayhem. And then I started to think back to February of 2013. I was a guest on Neil Cavuto's show, Your World with Neil Cavuto. And I love going on with Neil. He's fun. He can be very humorous sometimes, especially when his motor is going. And boy, more frequently than not, his motor is going these days. And we were talking about how the administration had released something like 68,000 criminal aliens because at the time the issue was budget sequestration. And the president said, well, we didn't have the money to hold on to them. So what are we going to do? Release criminals, really? And I said to Neil, I said, you know what's going to happen? At some point in the not-distant future, ICE is going to go out there, have a major field operation, give it some fancy name. You know, I call them all Operation Backrub. And they'll arrest a handful of people. And they'll issue a press release and say, are we great or what? We just arrested a couple thousand. So here's your couple thousand. I'd love to know how many of the 2,000-odd that were arrested had been released with that massive number back in 2013, as I had predicted. So on the one hand, they talk about how they arrested 2,000-plus aliens a week ago, and then a week later it's disclosed that during the last year they released 30,000. I mean, do you realize how crazy this is? So part of my title for the Front Page Magazine article was, you know, DHS takes one step forward, 10 steps back. I mean, this is insanity. Look how great we are. We arrested 2,000, but by the way, we let 30,000 out of the bag. Does anybody think that's successful? Really? Does that sound like it makes sense to anybody? So this is the kind of incompetence we're dealing with. They wouldn't discuss what convictions these people had. And I know that there are times when we're unable to hold people indefinitely, illegal aliens, but the judge can be told, the immigration judge can be told, if an alien, for example, has a serious criminal history and is prone to violence, they will hold them. They can. So when they were asked, when the administration was asked, what crimes had they been convicted of, dead air, crickets. However, last year, several hundred had been convicted of homicide and others had been convicted of rape. Now, if we're dealing with immigrants, they live in immigrant communities, which I think makes sense, and they live in the immigrant communities that mirror their own ethnicity and origins. You know, you don't expect to find somebody from Jamaica living in Chinatown. You don't expect somebody, from the Philippines living in Little Italy. It'd be very unusual. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it's unusual. So guess who is at greatest risk of the violence perpetrated by transnational criminals? It's the members of the immigrant communities of the same ethnicity. Now, what are we talking about? The Russian community, the Asian community, the Caribbean community, absolutely the Latino community, but not just them. Not just them. This goes across the board. So again, we come back to this issue. Am I being anti-immigrant for wanting our laws enforced to protect the ethnic immigrant communities? We used to raid the hooker houses when I was an agent. We used to have a joke about it, by the way. You know, you develop gallows humor in every profession, law enforcement no different. The joke that I had come up with, and everyone kind of liked it, so it kind of followed us whenever we raided the brothels with the public moral squad of the NYPD, I used to say that lots of guys got screwed, but nobody had sex. Because we found that the great majority of the clientele of these houses of prostitution were themselves illegal aliens. Their wives and girlfriends were back home, so Friday night, there they were looking to blow off some steam and whatever else, and they would be patronizing these houses of prostitution. Some of the women were prostitutes. They came here knowing they were going to ply their trade. which, by the way, is a ground for exclusion for an alien. But many of these young women had been coerced into it, had been duped. They thought they were going to work as waitresses. They thought they were going to work as nannies taking care of children. They didn't find out that the children they were going to be taking care of were 45 years and bald, you know. But so here they were. And it's not a laughing matter, because the degradation these women suffer, the whole business, it's terrible. And it's not just the Latino community. It's across the board. And so when we keep hearing this nonsense that, you know, you're not being compassionate if you want the laws enforced, how about showing compassion for Americans, American workers, American kids, going after the drug trade, going after the gangs? I don't know. We have a handful of agents doing that, so they grab an occasional headline. But the drugs are flowing into this country faster than water going into Richard Dreyfuss's ship in Jaws. You know, just we're being flooded. And it's destroying lives. It's behind most of the violence. Kids that should have bright futures don't. And now on top of it, we're bringing in more foreign workers than ever before and giving them the authority to work in the United States. So again, this is not about illegal immigration. There have been articles about the H-1B visa program. And both parties want it. Both parties want to see the destruction of the middle class, because they want the people who are writing the checks for their political campaigns to get exactly what they want. And what they want is to get rid of all the American workers, because American workers expect a living wage. In order to keep their jobs, members of Congress are willing to facilitate millions of Americans losing theirs. How's that for a trade-off? How's that for collateral damage? That's what we're facing. That's what we're facing. And they are deluding themselves into thinking that this won't destroy the country, that we're not undermining national security. It's as despicable and as disgusting as it gets. And that's the reason that I do the program, because it's so vital for me, folks, when I see kids walking by, going to school, hoping that they have a bright future. And we all remember the turmoil we faced when we were teenagers and we were starting out. We didn't know what work we would do. We didn't know if we were going to be successful. Are we going to find our little place in the world so that we can do okay and live a decent life? There's so much uncertainty. And there's never been more uncertainty than we face today. And the uncertainties that we face today pose existential threats, not just for our nation, but for our citizens as well. Lives are hanging in the balance. We are bleeding red and green. The blood of the victims of criminal aliens who shouldn't be here, the terrorists who've attacked us, the other terrorists who certainly want to come here to attack us, and the money is flowing out of our economy. And I'll tell you something interesting, and I'm going to write about it. I was looking at the remittances, the money being wired from the United States. And, you know, I'm looking at Obama with the situation with Israel, and it's really infuriating to me. But Obama's going to the UN to try to get treaties ratified. This has never happened before. If you want to know what the UN is really about, I was looking at the UN website, the General Assembly website, looking at the remittances, how much money is being wired. And the remittances last year that flowed to the third world from the first world amounted to just over $400 billion. $400 billion. And traditionally, the United States is behind at least half the money that goes to the third world. So although you look at records and they say $125 billion or whatever, I'm willing to bet that it's closer to that $200 billion mark. And if you look at the multiplier effect, the money that's not spent or invested in America and so forth, and then you look at Americans who lose their jobs, wages going down, Americans going from being tax-paying middle class to people living in poverty, losing their homes to foreclosure, driving down real estate values, relying on safety net programs through no fault of their own. I get furious when some conservative journalists blame middle-class workers for losing their jobs. Oh, the number of people on disability has doubled since Obama came to office. These aren't people who woke up lazy. They woke up unemployed. Dan Rather did a perfect story about it a couple of years ago. You can find it at capsweb.org or michaelcutler.net or progressives, because I always try to include this link. It was called No Thanks for Everything. And so there you had Rather interviewing computer programmers who had lost their jobs. They were displaced by people from India. One woman had her MBA in computer science, Phi Beta Kappa graduate, doing really well. She'd been a vice president of a Wall Street bank, went to work for Microsoft in Seattle. Comes to work one day, she was a supervisor, and they said, here's a box, fill it, take your stuff, you're out of here. They wouldn't give her a letter of reference, which is one of the tactics of Silicon Valley. Who, what they did do was bring in someone from India to replace her. She wound up losing her 401k, she lost her home, and she said that if it wasn't for her boyfriend taking her in, she'd be homeless. And when she went to placement counselors, they said, well, you're in your 50s, you're not going to get another job as a programmer, so get rid of the MBA, Computer Science, Phi Beta Kappa graduate. Take that out of your resume. You know what? Take out the fact that you went to college, just high school diploma. And she said, what kind of job am I going to get with just a high school diploma? And the guy said, a menial job, but that's all you're going to be qualified for. She said, how do I support myself that way? And they shrugged their shoulders, which is why she moved in with her boyfriend. I don't blame her for what this government of ours did. And I know conservatives say, well, the government doesn't create jobs. We could have that argument one day. When NASA decided it was going to go to the moon, or the president did, gave the job to NASA. NASA provided contracts to the companies that certainly hired the engineers and scientists. So we could have this conversation about whether or not the government creates jobs. But certainly the government is supposed to protect the jobs of hardworking Americans, and it's not. It's doing the exact opposite. It's doing the exact opposite. So when you look at the impact this has on the economy, it's mind-boggling. So there I was looking at the UN website, trying to find out what the numbers were, and I came across a report that left me absolutely speechless. Frequently, I use the term alien to describe foreign nationals present in the United States. I didn't make up the word alien. It's to be found in our immigration laws. The word alien is a reasonable term. It simply means any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. Not my definition. That's the definition in the law. Where is the insult? There is none. It doesn't say that people who are aliens are disgusting, ugly, smell bad, stupid. What? No. It just says you're not a citizen. That's it. If you're not a citizen, you're an alien. That's fair. But guess how the UN, the United Nations, this wonderful organization that Obama is going to, because he can't have his way with Congress. See, he wants his way. My way or the highway. Obama's idea of compromise is you'll do it my way and I'll do it my way. And then everything is wonderful. Don't you dare disagree with me. Never mind this is supposed to be a democracy. Never mind that, this constitutional law professor supposed. But the UN has another way of describing foreign workers. Hold on to your seats, folks. Maybe you want to put your seatbelt on. The United Nations has come to refer to foreign workers as migrant stock. Yeah, you heard that right. Migrant stock, S-T-O-C-K. I have never in my life heard a term that was more demeaning, dehumanizing, or humiliating. Migrant stock. It rhymes with livestock, with cattle. Cattle and cows and sheep and horses. Livestock. Migrant stock. That's all that they see in human beings. This is the amazing international organization that this president wants to go to get his way. And do you think that they're going to resist? Of course not. Do you know that the UN is salivating at the prospect of comprehensive reform? And do you know why the UN wants it? Because they speak glowingly. Oh, my God, they're falling down and they're rolling around and they're in rapture. Because it would mean more money will go to Africa and third world countries. Well, wait a minute, folks. Where's the money coming from? Where's the money coming from? This is like writing a story about looting going on during a blackout. And instead of talking about the crimes committed by the looters, focusing on how wonderful it is that people that don't work have big screen TVs, the latest sound systems and computers imaginable. Isn't that wonderful? How great is it that they were looting last night, so now they can enjoy the movies they're watching at home? Really? How about the damage done to the businesses that lost their merchandise so these shopkeepers can't support their families? But that's what they're doing. Instead of saying this is destructive to the U.S. economy, the focus is look at what that money means to the countries that receive the money that used to be in the United States, the salaries that had been paid to American workers. Not a word in the U.N. about the American worker. No one gives a damn about the American worker or the American family. We are expendable, folks. And if you look at the damage being done to America's minorities, it's off the chart. It's off the chart, and nobody gives a damn. This is all about how wonderful that we are feeding the third world while one in four American children now lives in poverty right here inside the borders of this country of ours, these United States of America. This is the UN that this president wants to go to get them to do what he wants. And I guarantee you he will meet zero resistance. When they have meetings about stakeholders and the immigration issue, and we've seen this before, it's not just this president, we had the same crap go on with George W., at the table of stakeholders with the lawyers representing the aliens. By the way, isn't it wonderful that most of these comprehensive laws that they propose, the legal fees will be paid for by the taxpayers. When you go to your accountant to get your taxes filed, when lawful immigrants go to their attorneys, they pay for their lawyers. We pay for our accountants. But if you're an illegal alien, they want to seal the record, which was done by Ted Kennedy back in the Reagan amnesty. Under Reagan, you weren't allowed to show those applications even to the FBI or homicide detectives. I had many situations where people from other law enforcement agencies said to me, Mike, I need to see a file on so-and-so. And they said, well, I got the file. Do you have a photograph? Yep. How is it? Crystal clear. Can I have a copy? Nope. Why not? It's part of his amnesty file. If I give it to you, I go to jail. And that was the Reagan amnesty. It's both sides of the aisle. Understand what they're doing. So you have a situation where the amnesty programs provide greater protection to illegal aliens than lawful immigrants or United States citizens. And then you have a president who can't wait for this to happen. And you had George W. Bush, not unlike Obama, have a meeting for the stakeholders. So the stakeholders were the lawyers who knew that they were guaranteed income under comprehensive reform because the government would pay it, not the aliens. The stakeholders were the corporations that wanted to hire these folks. The stakeholders with the various advocacy groups for these individuals who are making out like bandits because they're getting the contributions from them. Those were the stakeholders. Do you know who was not invited to the table of stakeholders? The unions that represent the ICE agents or the Border Patrol agents or the adjudications officers. You don't count. You know who was also missing in action at that table? Anybody representing the best interests of we the people, the citizens of the United States of America. The outrage is that the immigration laws are, in fact, I made this point when I spoke before the Tea Party. I said Doris Meisner, when she was the immigration commissioner, said that the immigration laws and the immigration agency must be customer-oriented. And I said, you know, I agreed with Doris. Our point of disagreement was who the customers were. Doris Meisner, this administration, and the Republicans, for the most part, believe that the customers are those who benefit by having the foreign workers in the United States and the foreign workers themselves. I always thought the customers were the citizens of the United States. What a novel thought. You know, we say a pledge of allegiance to the American flag and to the republic for which it stands. Isn't that how it goes? I'd like to see the day that we force politicians to say a similar pledge of allegiance to their constituents, we the people. It's not going to happen, though, unless we all get involved. It's not going to happen until we make them accountable. They are our employees. And I really believe, and you know, when I met with Louis Gohmert, he's tremendous. I was so honored to be on a panel with him when I was in Florida with the Horowitz Freedom Center. Jeff Sessions was on the panel, Congressman John Fleming. It was just wonderful to be there, and I really wish Sessions would run for president. We should have a draft Jeff Sessions movement in the United States. But when I met Louis Gohmert, and I've seen him before, I've testified before him, I went up to him, I said, Congressman, how would you like me to address you? Are you comfortable with Louie? And he said to me, you know, Mr. Cutler, and it was funny, I'm calling him by his first name, and he's calling me Mr. Cutler. He was such a respectful American leader. And he said, you know, when I was a judge, I insisted on being called judge because I lived in the community where I sat on the bench. So you have to have a little wall of separation between you and the community because you're going to be sitting in judgment of the members of that community. So he said, it's an uncomfortable situation. You have to kind of separate yourself a little bit. He said, but as a member of Congress, I represent these people. I'm one of them. I'm one of we the people. It's just that I'm the guy that gets to go to Washington, and it's my voice they got to listen to. But it's my voice speaking for those people in my community. In fact, he said, speaking for all Americans. He said, how can I represent people if I expect to be given some fancy title? He said to me, you have to call me Louie. I said, well, then you have to call me Mike. And we shook hands, and that was the understanding we had. And I make a suggestion, folks. When you encounter your elected representatives, let's stop calling them Mr. Mayor, Mr. Governor. Let's call them Charlie and Bill and Susan and Jane. Let's get away from this nonsense of enabling our politicians, especially the ones who think they're above it all. Let's remind them that they are our employees. They work for us, and we pay their wages. And if they are insubordinate, they need to be treated like any other insubordinate employee, and they need to be fired. One or two of us doing this isn't going to make a difference. And sometimes things have to get so bad that you can no longer ignore how bad it's gotten. I think we're there, folks. I think we're there. We're concerned about terrorism. We're concerned about the failing economy. We're concerned about the futures that our children and their children face in this crazy country. It's time the adults took back the country from these children who call themselves our political representatives. They are afflicted with the greedy gene, too many of them. They're being insubordinate, and we need to show them the door post-haste. That's the work all Americans must do. I hope you will join me in doing it. You know, I have to tell you, it's always wonderful joining you at the end of the week, sitting down and trying to explain what's going on in this crazy world. And believe me, sometimes I have a hell of a time explaining it to myself, let alone explaining it to anybody else. I was on Newsmax yesterday with J.D. Hayworth. I've become something of a regular on J.D.'s program. I love doing it. Check out their websites over at Newsmax also. But please get involved. You know, the fact that you listen to my program on Friday evenings pleases me. I'm happy to sit down and chat with you. And, in fact, next time we do the show, I ask that you call in, you know, and it's 310-982-4145. But I had so much that I wanted to cover today because I want the information out there. And the fact that there are podcasts available for those folks who maybe are too busy to sit down and read, you can listen to it. You can download it into your iPhone or Android device, and you can listen to the program while you do other stuff. I just want to try to provide you the information that you're not really getting in too many other places. You know, there's a news blackout. There was a time I could do 15 television interviews in a month, CNN, MSNBC, didn't matter. They were willing to at least have the debates and the conversations. No longer. The push to betray us has gotten so great because the amount of money has become so great that they are forgetting what damaging America would ultimately mean for all of us. And that's why we have to stand firm. This is our country. We need to take it back from these people. It's time that we sent them packing, and that's the job all Americans can and must do. I hope you'll join me again next week right here at the same time. And please, folks, remember, as I always like to say, democracy is not a spectator sport. I hope you all have a great weekend, this first weekend of spring, and I'll see you again next week right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Good night, everybody.